This is Tom Browning.
This is Pat Lackey.
This is Raquel Aurelia.
My name is Kirk Evans.
This is Rich Aurelia.
Hi, hello, and welcome, everybody. This is George Grant of the Cincinnati Reds, and welcome. You're listening to the Red Hot Broadcast on RedHotMama.com.
Welcome, baseball fans. You're listening to the Red Hot Broadcast on Red-Hot-Mama.com. This is February 11th, episode number 89. I'm your host, Amanda, and with me is the crack technical staff, Johnny. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Hello. Did you do the hyphen again, or were you saying dashes
dash.
This time? Okay.
It's funny. I kind of mess up when I say hyphen.
Yeah.
I am so ingrained to say red dash hot dash mama, though it is properly a hyphen. I will give you that. Good show that we've got this week for the middle of February. We got an interview with one of the founding members, or perhaps the founding member of the Society for Cincinnati Sports Research, otherwise known as SCISR.
SCISR.
Jim Farmer on the show later. And in the meantime, we're talking about the, you know, little bits of crap that are going down in the NLC just prior to pitchers and catchers reporting.
That's right. That's this week.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And as all the teams are winding down, heading into that, they're not doing anything big. They're just trying to fill out their rosters.
Yeah.
To have
get enough people on board.
To play with all the scads of minor leaguers that they have.
They just need enough people to shag balls.
That's right. Starting off, we've got the Cardinals, who have invited many people. Notable among them, I thought, was outfielder Juan Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't actually played since 2005, so he's very much
very
of a long shot.
And well-rested, I would say.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
He was once a power-hitting outfielder.
Yeah. Well.
He had several years with, you know, 40-some home runs. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's something the Cardinals could take a flyer on.
Well, the Cardinals do need outfielders, without a doubt, but I'm not really sure they need old guys. I think they're pretty
well,
much
they don't have Edmonds anymore. They don't have Roland anymore.
That's true.
They
may actually have a bit of an old guy vacuum.
There you go. Other than La Russa.
We're doing a little bit of the dulcet tones of the Red Hot Broadcast this week, aren't we? Yeah. Feeling smooth.
The Pirates
yeah.
just today, I believe, signed Doug Minkiewicz.
Ah, wow.
Good luck spelling that one.
Wow.
Yeah,
we've got it typed out on the show notes here, and you can probably see. Well, it'll probably be on the post where
sure.
this is, but that's a whole lot more vowels than there are syllables there. And look, two incidences of IE. Very good.
That's right. Yes, and it has a Z.
Well, you know, every good name needs to have a Z.
I guess.
But, enough about his name. Is he any good?
He's been known for his defense, kind of a light-hitting first baseman type guy, which is something that the Pirates have a lot of.
Yeah.
So, Pat on Where Have You Gone, Andy Van Slyke, described the move as straight out of the Department of Redundancy Department.
Ah. Well, you know, they did, you know, they're no longer in the possession of Craig Wilson.
That's right.
He was not that light hitting for, you know, he was more of your traditional first baseman.
He was light hitting last year.
Well, yes.
Bone spurs might do that to you.
Yeah. Sounds painful.
The Astros got in the mix too, signing a backup catcher to a minor league spring invite. And then I didn't really see anything with the Brewers or the Cubs.
You know, the Brewers are the least reported on team on Red Hot Mama.
I know.
But
I think that's because they haven't really done anything since they signed Mike Cameron.
Well, they're, you know, we haven't been reporting on the Brewers. We haven't even really had them in our territory for that long. So I give us a little bit of a flyer on that one. But for crying out loud, they're kind of a boring team.
The Cubs have been kind of boring, too, since they signed
spent all their money on in one spot.
I mean, they've been constantly connected with the Orioles for a leadoff hitter of second baseman of theirs, but nothing has come of that. So
what, the Cubs need another leadoff hitter? I think they already have three.
Well, they have Soriano, who thinks he's a leadoff hitter.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he does.
Yeah.
What else?
The Reds really signed the most. It was like throwback to days when Jim Bowden was their general manager. And
they'd
80 people on invites to... Like, what the heck?
Just, yeah, see what sticks.
Yeah. But among them, Craig Wilson, Thor.
Woo!
He's back in the NLC.
Well, you know, hopefully. He spent his light hitting year last year, and he's ready to get back into form this year.
He had some surgery, so maybe he'll have some pop back in his bat. Maybe he'll let his hair grow again. I think that's really what happened.
That's really important. Very, the guy who sits across from me at across from the cubicle wall from me at work had a wisdom teeth taken out.
Ouch!
And he developed bone spurs in his jaw. Oh. As a result of, I guess, as a result of the surgery.
That sounds fantastic. It's like you're taking something that's painful.
What's amazing
and
is
upping it.
It didn't make him talk any less. Who else?
Some people talk a lot.
Hey, there's someone else on the list.
That's right. Everybody's favorite wisecracker, Kent Merker.
Kent Merker.
The Reds signed him
Welcome
to a minor
to
league
Cincinnati.
Contract.
Kent Merker. I thought he would be, coaching.
Yeah. I thought last year he got injured? I thought he was done.
Well, I mean, that's what everyone said, too.
I think he said that. He said, I think. We'll see.
Oh, I mean, he's obviously a real bright guy, and he's, funny, and he seems like a natural fit to have down in the minors somewhere. Good, bandying about with the pitching prospects and, keeping their heads on straight and keeping things light in the clubhouse kind of thing.
Yeah, so we'll see how that
Apparently
goes.
Apparently he'll be doing that, with the Reds, or more likely with the bats. I mean, because come on. On the other hand, who knows?
One last bit of news before we get to the interview. It's actually Brewers related.
No.
It's also boring, though. They picked up the 2009 option for their manager, Ned Yost.
Isn't that weird?
It's like, that's not this coming season. That's the one after this one.
Why would they do that?
I don't know.
I mean,
because they like mediocrity. I don't know.
What's the benefit of picking up the? I mean, there's, I guess, the distraction situation.
Yes, there could be the distraction of.
Ooh, are they going to bring him back? Now the Brewers are never going to make anything of themselves because they aren't sure whether they're going to bring him back.
I don't know. He's done okay. They've got a lot of talent. They keep getting better every year.
The option would still be good next year, right? I mean, they can wait to do this until they see how he's performed after the season.
And maybe some other better manager would come along.
Or at some point when it's going to make a splash, an impact. Here we are, February 11. No one's even paying attention.
The thing I read said that they'd actually picked up the option like months ago, but just this week announced it.
Oh, okay. I think maybe the Brewers need to work on that PR.
Yes, they do.
All about that team marketing. Well, that's about all that's going on in Cincinnati land and all of the NLC, not just Cincinnati, but all of the NLC. But we do, like I mentioned earlier, we do have the interview with the founding member of the Cincinnati Society for Sports.
It is another phone interview. We get to test out our brand new equipment. There were some technical difficulties, though it comes through sounding just great.
Oh, yeah. It sounds fantastic on our side. From what I understand, Jim couldn't hear us.
Yes.
And he couldn't hear John at all, which is why you don't hear his voice on the interview at all. And he could only hear me when I leaned back from the microphone about 3 feet and shouted.
I figured out the problem. This won't happen again.
Well, we're all amateurs figuring this out.
This is podcasting.
But I give Jim excellent props for pushing through anyway and making the best of what he could understand of what we were saying and putting together what I thought was very cohesive, very coherent kinds of responses. So, here we go. Here's the interview with Jim Farmer.
I got my interest in sports, the Reds. I actually was a Bengals fan first. I was born in 71, so I was a little too young to. I remember a little bit of the Big Red Machine, but not really much. My father never took me to games, and it was a classic situation where I wanted to play sports, but my dad wouldn't let me. It was one of those strange situations. So.
Well, that is strange because many dads push their sons into sports. Was he afraid you would get hurt?
That was the excuse. I just don't think that he felt like getting involved. So I hope he doesn't hear this, but he won't, trust me. But some things never change. But I took an interest in football first, and I started getting interested in the Bengals. They went to the Super Bowl when I was 10, in 1981. So I kind of took an interest in sports from the Bengals. The Bengals were good in the 80s. They went to two Super Bowls, and I never really really appreciated baseball. You know, I always use the classic excuse. I thought it was boring. You know, anytime somebody tells me they think baseball's boring, it just drives me nuts. It's like saying Dylan can't sing, Bob Dylan can't sing. Well, you don't get it. If you think baseball's boring, and you think that Dylan can't sing, you just don't get it.
Amen. But,
go ahead.
Amen and hallelujah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was one of those classic people that used that as an excuse. I thought that baseball was boring. That was until 1990 when the Reds won the World Series. And I was a bandwagoner. I jumped on the bandwagon, but the difference is I didn't jump off. I've been stuck in Redland ever since, and I've been a rabid fan since the 1990 Reds swept the heavily favored Oakland Athletics in the World Series.
So how did you go from bandwagon baseball fan to sports research enthusiast?
Well, I've always been a history fan. I remember I was 5 years old. That was 1976, and it was the bicentennial of the United States. You know, 1776, mm-hmm. 1976, and I always was a fan of history in general. And when I became I jumped on the Reds bandwagon, I was interested in knowing what other successful teams were out there, other teams that I might be interested in learning about, and. So I started going backwards. I went from 1990, and then, you know, I started researching the Big Red Machine. They won 4 pennants and 2 World Series, and I kept going. The Reds won a pennant in 1961. They lost to the Yankees, and then I kept going. In 1940, they won the World Series. They won the pennant in 1939, and then 1919, and even further back, 1882, the forgotten pennant-winning Reds team, 1882. So I just, that's kind of, you know, the 1990 Reds, I went backwards. I just started, you know, seeing what other things I can get excited about with this Reds franchise. It was a little bit of civic pride also, because I'm a proud Cincinnatian. Even though I live in northern Kentucky, I still consider myself a Cincinnatian, and there's a little bit of civic pride there also.
So you've started up the Society for Cincinnati Sports Research.
Right.
What are you trying to do with that organization?
Well, this is brand spanking new. It's still in utero right now. It's still being developed. It hasn't been born as of yet. Hopefully, by spring, we'll have a workable website. And what it is for all you baseball fans out there, you might be familiar with the Society of American Baseball Research, SABRE. Well, I'm a member of that also. I'm a card-carrying member of SABRE, and I ran a website called Cincy Sports History that had the history of all the major and minor league teams ever to play in Cincinnati. And I wanted to take that a step further. I liked how SABRE was set up, and I just thought maybe it'd be neat to have something similar to SABRE, but just for Cincinnati sports only. And we came up with the name Society for Cincinnati Sports Research, and the initials SCSR, but we call it SCISR. So, yeah, we're basically ripping off SABRE. So we want to set up a website that has the game summaries, box scores, and of every game, not just baseball, but football, basketball, and hockey also. And I did a little of that with my Cincy Sports History website. I guess the Cincy Sports History website's the predecessor to the SCISR website. And, you know, we just want to create a nice organization where we can do, you know, I'd love to for us to go down to the old site of Crosley Field and dedicate a plaque. There's nothing down there commemorating the site of Crosley Field, and it needs to be done, and that's kind of what we want to do, being some of my other friends that are involved in this. You know, we go down to Crosley Field, and we dedicate a plaque, and not only was Crosley Field down there, but there were two other ballparks on that exact spot. So baseball was played where Crosley Field was from 1884 to 1970, and there's nothing commemorating that spot. And that's something that we would want to do, you know, come in and we'll just fund it and pay for the plaque and whatnot, you know. And, you know, there's a lot of other ideas, a lot of nice things, perks that we want to eventually tack on once we get the ball rolling. So
that seems like a crime that we don't commemorate that with even a plaque.
Right. There was about 10 years ago, there was a small little monument that only commemorated Crosley Field, but we would commemorate all three ballparks. It was League Park from 1884 to 1900, then you had Palace of the Fans from 1901 to 1911, And then you had Redland Field slash Crosley Field from 1912 to 1970. Redland Field was the same ballpark as Crosley. They just changed the name. And there's nothing down there commemorating. Not only that, but, you know, the original 1869-70 Red Stockings played the spot where their ballpark is where the Cincinnati Museum Center is, down at Union Terminal. And right in front of the Cincinnati Museum Center, there's nothing commemorating where the 1869-70 Red Stockings played and made that historic team. Nothing. And that's something that really annoyed me. And I thought that, you know, creating this society, I guess you could call it. And we don't have any secret handshakes yet or anything like that, but. But we would kind of step in and start doing that stuff that the Reds and other local historians haven't done.
I tell you, that seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, it is, exactly, you know. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I think it's a Cincinnati thing, because if you go to Great American Ballpark, that you have championship banners for the World Series teams, the five World Series teams, but you don't have any commemorating the league champion and the division winners, you know, like every other ballpark. And the Bengals do the exact same thing. They've won about five division titles and two conference championships, but you go into the Paul Brown Stadium and nothing is commemorating them. And I just think it's a Cincinnati thing. I don't think it's personally geared towards the Reds organization or one. It's just one of those things. And, you know, me being a history nut, I feel it's my duty to step in and try to do something about it. So
you're trying to engender some culture change in the Cincinnati area.
What's that again?
It's a culture change you're trying to get.
Right. There are people out there that, you know, I work for the Reds Hall of Fame and Museum, and a lot of people come through, and you'd be surprised how much knowledge Reds fans have, and Bengals fans have, and Cincinnati sports fans have, and they kind of feel it's slightly injustice to not have, you know, markers commemorating these spots. And, you know, another thing I'd love to do is, my family is from the East End area of Cincinnati, and there was a Major League Baseball team that played there in 1891 called the Cincinnati Kelly's Killers. There was a Major League Baseball team that played down there. And I would absolutely love to put a marker down there commemorating the site of where that baseball team played. So in 1891, Cincinnati was the beer capital of the world, and we had two Major League Baseball teams. So that would have been a nice year to live.
Oh, yeah. So when we've talked before about the Reds' history, and we've talked a little bit about misconceptions with the Reds' history, with the history of the franchise.
Right, the timeline, yeah. Well, it's a misconception that I also bought into also, because I was told it, that the Cincinnati Reds, the current Reds franchise, began in 1869, the original Red Stockings. That's actually not true. The original Red Stockings folded after the 1870 season. There was a new major league, the first major league, was being developed, called the National Association, in 1871. And the Cincinnati Red Stockings ownership decided they wanted to go back to amateur status. They didn't want to participate in this major league. And for the players, now this is interesting. For the players, Harry Wright, George Wright, I believe Hal McVee, and Charlie Gold, Cincinnati resident Charlie Gold. Those four players left Cincinnati and went to Boston in 1871 and created a new team called the Boston Red Stockings. They even took the nickname with them.
Wow.
They played in the National Association and won four pennants. When the association folded and the National League was created in 1876, that team moved to the National League, and they eventually changed their name to the Boston Braves and then moved to Milwaukee, and now they're in Atlanta. So if you look at the timeline for the Atlanta Braves, you'll see they started in 1871. If you look at for the Reds, it'll show that they began in 1882. This franchise is actually the third franchise.
So do the Braves advertise this fact?
A couple years ago on their website, they did link the two teams. They did link the Braves to the 1869-70 Reds, but I don't think it's there anymore. I'm not exactly sure why, but the Reds somewhere, they even in Great American Ballpark it says established 1869, so somewhere down the line, I don't know exactly why they do that, but I don't know if the ownership even knows. They may not know. They just may be going along with what they've been told, you know, but you know, there were this, in fact, is the third franchise. All the records begin in 1882. They don't begin in 1869. They don't begin in 1876. They begin in 1882. And even when Dusty Baker was announced as the Reds manager, they announced him as the 60th manager in Reds history. Well, that's true. From 1882 to 2008, he is the 60th manager. So I don't know if they really know. I just don't know. It's really not a big deal. It's just one of those myths that, you know, I kind of like want people to know, because people ask me all the time, why do their stats only go to 1882, you know? And that's the reason, because this is actually the third franchise, not the first or second. The second one was created in 1876 and folded in 1880 because the National League was cleaning up. The National League was worried about their reputation, and they wanted to get rid of beer sales in their ballpark and Sunday games on the Sabbath.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, well, Cincinnati is a Germantown. We like to drink our beer, you know?
Heck yeah.
And Cincinnati protested, and they said, no, we're going to keep playing ball on Sundays, and we're going to keep selling beer in our ballparks. Well, the National League, the only league at the time, they said, okay, fine, you're out of the league. Where are you going to go? And they dropped them, and that team folded. So, you know, 2 years later, or a year later, in 1882, a new major league was formed called the American Association, which allowed beer sales and allowed Sunday games to be played. And the American Association gave birth to the current Reds team, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Brooklyn Los Angeles Dodgers. All four of those teams began in the American Association, which was nicknamed the Beer and Whiskey League because they allowed beer sales in their ballpark, unlike the National League. So
sounds like the fun league to me.
Yeah, well, it was also cheaper. Tickets were 50 cents in the National League, and in the Association they were 25 cents. So it was more of a, they zoned in more on a blue-collar beer swigging, you know, clientele, and the league lasted 10 years. It's a major league. It's considered a major league. It lasted 10 years, and it folded when all of these teams, such as the Reds, were leaving the league to go to the National League. You know, about 7 or 8 years later, and the Reds won a pennant in that league in 1882. The 1882 Cincinnati Reds team holds the highest winning percentage of any Reds team to date, even higher than the Big Red Machine. So, you know, that's regrettably, the Reds omit that championship. They don't acknowledge it. You see it in the Reds Hall of Fame, but the Reds don't acknowledge it. And it's a shame, because just because they were in an extinct league doesn't mean it doesn't count. Those players worked just as hard back then as they do, you know, as they do now.
Well, so. Clearly, and if we say that the team started in 1860s, you would think that everything from there on forward would count. You'd also mentioned a myth or a misconception about Joe Nuxall.
Yes, God love him, God rest his soul. Great, you know, he's Cincinnati's, he was and is Cincinnati's crown jewel, but everyone has, not, I can't say everyone, but a lot of people, there's a misconception that he was the youngest player ever to play in the major leagues. This isn't true. He was 15 years old, but there was a gentleman by the name of Fred Chapman who was 14, who played for the Philadelphia Athletics in 1887. He was 14, and he is, in fact, the youngest player ever to play in the game. Joe Nuxall was the youngest in the modern era. But some people think it was he was the youngest player ever, and it's just not the case. And you know, Nuxall kind of always downplayed that start. He only pitched in 2/3 of a game and got shelled. He gave up 5 runs against the Cardinals in 2/3 of an inning. That was during the war years, 1944. So the major leagues were very depleted with talent. Okay, so, and they also didn't integrate the league. So they let blacks play in the league to fill up the rosters, they wouldn't have gone after a 15-year-old kid and given him a shot. So, you know, Nuxall got a shot because of segregation and because of the wars. And he always mentioned that when people would talk about that with him. He always said, well, it wasn't, the circumstances gave me that opportunity, but, you know, so that's, but the misconception, though, is that he was the youngest ever. It's even on his Reds Hall of Fame plaque, youngest player ever, and it wasn't. It was actually Fred Chapman, who played for the Philadelphia A's. He was 14. He only played in one game, but it was in 1887, and so that makes him the youngest major league player ever.
What makes one era the modern era?
The establishment of the American League in 1901.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so when the American League came to rival, well, after the association folded after the 1892 season, the National League had the monopoly on baseball from 1893 to 1900, and Ban Johnson, who actually worked for the Cincinnati Kelly's Killers, that other baseball team I was telling you about in Cincinnati in 1891. Van Johnson went on to run a minor league called the Western League, and he created it, changed the name to the American League, and declared major league status. And 1901 to now will always be the modern era. Now, before the turn of our century, up to 1999, they said a lot of historians refer to Nuxhall as the youngest player in the 20th century. Well, you know, we're not in the 20th century anymore, so. Now historians are saying, well, he was the youngest in the modern era, which is what I, you know, mentioned.
Right. What other things do Reds fans need to know to be, really knowledgeable about the reality of the history of the Reds franchise?
Well, there's so much, spanning 100 and something, however many years, there's so much to know. I guess.
Well, they just have to join the society.
Yeah. You don't have to be a know-it-all to join it. You know, once we get it launched, you could just be a fan of, you could be a fan of minor league hockey. You know, so we're not picky on who joins. You know, anyone and everyone's welcome. But I'm trying to think of some stuff. Some interesting stuff is that. The Reds management, managers, a lot of people are kind of down. I don't want to say a lot, but people are split on the Dusty Baker hiring. And I for one, think it's a great hire. You know, the Reds have not had a history, I mean, dating back to, 1882, and of hiring proven managers that have won elsewhere to come into the organization and do something. They usually hire people that aren't well-known. Sparky Anderson was a nobody until he became manager, and the Reds were have been notorious for that for 100 and something years, and there's only been about four or five managers that have come into the Reds organization that had a proven track record, and one in particular is Bill McKechnie. He had incredible success with the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 20s, and the Cardinals in the 30s, and the Boston Braves in the late 30s, and Pal Crosley. Right in the middle of I think, eight straight losing seasons in the 30s, he decided to overpay Bill McKechnie to come in and straighten this team out. And in 1938, he did this. And in 39, he had him in the World Series. And in 1940, we were world champions. So McKechnie for one. And, Davey Johnson in recent years, Davey Johnson was a proven winner who came in here. And, Lou Piniella wasn't. He didn't do all that well in New York. He came in here and won a World Series. But before that, he didn't have much success. So there's only very few, and it's something that people don't really think about. And another thing that people don't think about with the Reds is that they've never emphasized pitching. You know, we haven't had that many Reds. We only have one pitcher in the Hall of Fame, Epa Rixey, who was a Red, who went in as a Red. Outside of that, even during the Big Red Machine years, we didn't have Hall of Fame pitching, and that's what, regrettably, only. It costed us. We, against the Oakland A's in 72, their pitching was better than ours, and they beat us, and we wound up only winning two World Series with 5 to 6 Hall of Famers on the team. You think, how can the team only win two World Series with that when you're that stacked? Well, it was their pitching. We didn't have Hall of Fame pitching. So we brought Tom Seaver in 77, but when Tony Perez was traded during the offseason of 77, that really kind of ended the Big Red Machine run. So... I wish people would, if people knew that the Reds not emphasizing pitching now is really no different than they were in the 70s or the 60s, so.
That's true. And maybe that's something that the Reds organization today should learn about from the past.
Right. It's the best pitching staff we've had was in the 1920s, and we came close to winning pennants that year during that run. The Big Red Machine only had one 20-game winner on that entire stretch. It was Jim Merritt who won 20 games in 1970, and it was Sparky Anderson who knew how to juggle his pitching staff that created all that success. But these guys were good. Don Gullett were good, but they weren't Hall of Famers. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. Pitching is the number one thing. Going back forever, that pitch until the dawn, the beginnings of Major League Baseball, pitching is what you need to focus on. But it's so expensive now, you can't just run out and get a Hall of Fame pitcher. We were lucky to get Tom Seaver in 77, you know. We would never been able to trade for a guy like that now. So it's just the reality of the reality of Major League Baseball. So
that's very true. Jim, it's been a pleasure having you on the program.
Okay,
I hope that you'll come back, that we can continue to talk, especially once you've got the Society for Cincinnati Sports Research really launched and up and going.
Yeah, I'd love to. It's been a pleasure.
Sounds interesting. I look forward to having him back on the show once things are really up and going, and I'm good to hear a little bit more.
That's a lot of interesting Reds history, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nuxall, not the oldest, youngest pitcher ever.
Apparently not, in the modern era.
And I know he was not the oldest pitcher ever.
He could have been, though. In fact, I think that the Reds really missed the boat on that one. They totally had the chance.
They brought back Riho. They really...
Why not throw Joe out there?
All right.
The regular pitchers and catchers are going to be reporting to spring training, and the baseball season is finally getting going. Spring is right around the corner.
Except for the half a foot of snow that we're expecting over the next few days.
Yeah, well, they've predicted that like twice already this month, and we haven't gotten any, so we'll see. But in any event, looking forward to spring training. Keep on hanging in there, and we'll see you at the ballpark.
Show your love for the show by leaving a comment on iTunes, or leave your own rant about the dysfunctional NL Central on our website at red-hot-mama.com.